It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I haven't noticed.
Hello everybody, Nick Neame here, and welcome to Bigger on the Inside, episode number 15, or as I'm more commonly known, Fezboy. Damn, that's right. As always, I'm joined with Paul Verhoeven wannabe Ringo.
Excuse me? Jeez. I take offense to that, even though he's, you know, a legend in his own right.
So you don't want to be a Paul Verhoeven
I want to be Ringo. I want to be G-Cap. You know, I want to be my own me. Anyway, hello everybody, how's it going?
I got you really salty within the first minute. I'm doing something right, obviously.
Please make fun of Connor as well.
And as always, we have regular guest. I've ranked him up from special to regular. It's Geofax.
How's it going, guys?
Isn't special to regular a downgrade?
I don't know. I just think he's like started to like slowly morph his way into BOTI history.
Throughout history, where I can proudly tell all my descendants that, you know, I was on this show back in 2017.
Back in the good old time of 2017 when we had a black American president.
When we had an orange for a president.
I love that line.
So good.
I wouldn't vote for the president. He's orange. Yeah. I didn't. That's not even one of my notes. I just remembered that line. Right. How have you guys been?
George.
Okay.
George.
Exams are done. Long weekend has involved me winding down. If you can tell. As of yesterday afternoon, my throat, my voice have decided to just slowly end me, so please excuse that. But apart from that, I've just been winding down because the semester's over. And
you are not excused!
No. Okay, I'm gonna one day pay you to do an entire podcast in that voice. Anyway, so yeah, I've just been relaxing, which has been the opposite of what I've been doing before exams. So yeah, how about you, Fax?
I haven't been up to much really. I mean, I've been working a fair bit this week to compensate a few medical bills I had to pay. But I did manage to last weekend do some work with good mate old Ringo here, and we were helping.
Yes, that is true.
A mutual friend of ours. We were helping him make shoot a short scene for a showreel, so I got to spend my weekend doing that last week, so that was pretty cool. It's nice to get back into doing that, and looking forward to doing it more so this year. So yeah.
Alright, Nickname, what have you got to say for yourself?
I just want to make sure you like got all that out of your system.
I'll put it out. It's all yours. Take it.
So I've had exams, most of last week. I've got one coming up next week, but for this coming week, I've got nothing, which is great. I can just wind down a bit. For me, the highlight was probably Whovians. As I said, I got to meet Paul Verhoeven. You're not bitter or anything.
I'm not bitter. It's not like you've met a lot of people that I want to meet. And I'm sitting here in Melbourne, just crying and just chilling with Connor, which is better than Whovians any day.
Hey, high five.
Chilling with You're just like weeping over the fact you can't beat Paul Verhoeven.
One day.
Well, to be fair, like, I told him to, like, if you messaged him, I was like, I said to him, he'll say hi to you. And it's like, yeah, it's all good, man, you know? We briefly talked about, his show that escapes me. He plays the Inquisitor. The Inquisitor! There you go. Got my voice.
That's
back
still going.
sorry, what was that?
Is that still going?
What is?
That show, the Escape Tower, whatever thing. The...
I don't know. I'm not a fan of ABC Me, so I don't know. I don't know.
No,
I don't like kids' shows these days. Back in my day!
Oh, just you just keep on delivering, don't you?
Yeah.
He's really running it into the ground.
We had good quality television, like a talking train.
Oh my goodness, talking train.
Thomas?
Plasticine Builder.
Bob?
The way you described him. Sorry, yeah, continue.
And two grown men dressed up as bananas, so...
Hey.
What have you got against this? Hold on. Stop. No more Doctor Who talk until you apologise, okay? That is my
time. Yes, I agree.
I never said that's bad. That's so much fun.
That was
great.
That was a very harsh way of describing bananas in pyjamas, I gotta say.
Just
what,
say.
Two grown men dressed up as bananas?
Yes, it insinuates things that should not be insinuated by such an amazing show. So I think we should take the stage and apologize.
Hey, I've got a nice soft spot for bananas and pajamas. I mean, Rat in the Hat was like the funniest person because the amount of stupid shit he would do each episode.
He was a conniving businessman, and we were all taught to hate the corporations from him.
Conniving.
Gonna get into the thematics of bananas and pajamas on a Doctor Who podcast.
This is important.
That's how we're always gonna do it. Here, now. Forever.
Like, that's basically our shtick, isn't it? Like, we talk about Doctor Who, and then we go on a 20-minute tangent about an entirely different topic. And we're like, oh yeah, this is a Doctor Who podcast.
Wait.
Get back to that.
Wait, this is a Doctor Who podcast?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know.
Okay. Could you imagine a podcast about bananas?
It's mostly a Doctor Who podcast.
Yes. Because...
Mostly, asterisk.
Because yeah. We're going to sneak in bananas and pajamas. And we're allowed to, so stop.
We've got to get our banana and jump... pajamas talk. Yes. Got to get that banana and pajamas talk every week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Quality television.
Episode 15, where we go off the rails and stop talking altogether.
I don't think this is as badly off the rails as we did back in, Thin Eyes.
Oh my goodness.
Thin Eyes was just a train wreck of an episode, like... We were so over the place. But, yeah. Somehow we deviated off us, right? We're talking about Paul Verhoeven and how bitter George was about that.
What? No.
But,
I'm fine. I am fine.
I guess the other really memorable thing that we've actually done this week is we've set up a Twitter.
Yay.
For this thing. Yeah. You'd be thinking, about time.
We've been doing this since April 2016, and we just set up the fucking Twitter. Like,
yeah.
I blame myself, because Nick had the Facebook going, so it was like about time that one of us decided, hey, let's actually share our stuff and let people watch it. Listen to it. But 14 followers. Just saying. Progress.
and speaking of that, we also have a YouTube channel now too, where we're going to put all these lovely audios in video form on a dying website. But that's okay. we need people to embrace this glorious dynamic somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So YouTube's the best way to do it as of right now. I don't think much else in regards to things that have been happening. So do you guys want to just slip right into this episode?
Radio Free Sky is following us. Just going to put that out there for a second time. That was...
Yeah, you're very proud of that.
My jaw dropped. Anyway, continue.
No, that is a big thing. As I said, Radio Free Sky was a huge influence on me even starting this podcast.
Exactly.
So.
To have your influence follow you after being on Twitter for like... a day or two is just like, oh my god.
I think it was just, ooh, new Doctor Who podcast. Jump at it. I want to understand. But yeah, so do you guys want to get talking into Pyramid at the End of the World?
Shall we?
Yes.
Awesome. Alright. Episode 7. The Pyramid at the End of the World. See, you can't not say it and not have to sound like really grand and over the top. Like, you're gonna be like, the Pyramid at the End of the World. Like, even the pauses, you have to do the pauses to really sell the title of this episode.
Nick, I think you're taking too much away from the actual name of the episode and not the contents itself. Just
I agree.
Well, let's be honest, right? So when I was doing my plot synopsis, that title just struck out to me as just awesome.
I mean,
because it is an awesome title.
I agree.
I mean, like, why is there a pyramid? Why is it at the end of the world? You don't know.
You sound so fucking corny right now.
I'm going all pantomimey, it's okay.
God.
I can't wait to talk about another pantomime episode, but we're going to talk about this one for now. General thoughts?
Facts.
Facts me, what?
In short, I loved this episode, but it's got to do with a lot of the small things that happened, and those sort of like build up into one wholesome feeling about it. It being in the middle of a trilogy, and only having discovered that last week or the week before, I can't remember. I was kind of like, okay, I know there's going to be something else now. I know there's going to be a next step after this, but I'm really interested to see how it develops. And there was this constant theme of, it was like the tiny events that can lead to the end of the world. And it was just the way they set that up. It was like, here's the first thing, here's the second thing, here's the third thing, and there's the end. And it just sort of worked really well for some reason. Like, I was really satisfied watching it. And I liked how Bill developed in this episode. I like how the Doctor sort of became, you know, a bit like, this is wrong. Like, when he's sort of struggling against, you know, humanity, it's one of my favorite sort of things that happen, like with, was it Midnight, where the Doctor's fighting humans, basically, and he's trying to maintain calm and solve the problem. Similar situation here. And I loved, I can't remember the character's name, but the lady who worked at the biological experimentation lab thing. I loved the relationship that went on between them two. It was just such a nice feeling to have someone who just got the Doctor, like, just instantly understood what he was trying to do. You didn't have that breaking down of, I'm doing this, da-da-da-da-da, to make it spacey-wacey or something, da-da-da. But, yeah, I really liked this episode, and I'm happy to talk about it more. Ringo?
Well, my heart's definitely warm because Connor loves really likes an episode. So, for the most part, except for a couple little gripes, I really love this episode as well. From the concept, so the synopsis, this one was the one I was most excited for based on how just fun and interesting the concept sounded. And that end, like, from everything, I think the concept, the way we went back and forth through these two different stories happening, and then the ending just completely destroyed me. But I'm excited to talk about this one because, like Connor, I really loved it. But as far as specifics, I'll mention that later. Nick,
well, sometimes my voice there. it was a good episode. I think the ending is probably the highlight of the episode. But I have some problems with it. which I look forward to getting into when we talk specifically. So, positives. Who wants to go first?
I'll leave that to Ringo, since...
Alright, I'll list off a couple, but I want to hear Connor do most of that, because it's just such a rare sight hearing him talk positives.
Yeah, I'm
gloating about it. Okay, so my first point, this is what I've written actually. The UN Secretary General interrupted Bill's date. It's just that. That's my first dot point. I know it's, you know, just a humorous thing and it's already been done with the Pope, but oh my goodness. Give her a break, guys. Come on. She's just trying to... Oh my... Anyway.
I think it was just a humorous, nice bait and switch.
It like was.
You expected to be the Pope. And the nut is the UN Secretary General, you know. Surprise!
The opening minutes were really fun. I loved how we saw the previously footage mixed with the now scenes. I thought that was a really nice little tie over, because this was a part two, so it was good to have that little segue thing here. As far as broader stuff goes, I thought the directing was good. For the most part, I'll talk about specifics later, the acting was good. And the ending worked to develop Bill really, really well. Nardo was once again... He just keeps on giving. He's a gift that keeps on giving. Matt Lucas is amazing. He's become one of my favourites, and this episode does not shy of that. I really liked Erica in this episode. Rachel Denning was very good with what she was given, and she just has Companion written all over her with her interactions and relationship with the Doctor in that little end bit there. As far as what I've got written down, that's it for there. I'll let Mr. Fax or Nickname continue it on.
Well, I'll continue next. So, you said a fair amount of the positives I had with this episode. Mm. I'll add two more.
Yep.
Hang on, I think I have two more. No, we'll go three. I liked the callback to the Doctor being the President of Earth. Like, as terrible as Death and Heaven was, that was definitely one of the best parts about it. So it's nice to see that get recalled. And speaking of that entire thing, I like how the lie that was used in the pilot, you know, how about like the crane, like a crane was used to bring the TARDIS into the office. I like how that's just been totally been reconfirmed by them having to use a crane to lift the TARDIS out onto a plane. I still don't even understand how they even got it on a plane.
Oh my goodness.
But that's intrigue for another time. I'm just trying to think. Directing, yeah, you mentioned directing. What was the other thing? I'm trying to look for it. Yeah, I loved the intrigue of an old pyramid showing up out of nowhere with no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There you go. There on positives.
Alright.
Here we go.
So, you've said, again, a lot of the things that I was piqued by. But I'll talk about the specifics of what I was mentioning earlier. The little events that sort of played out throughout the episode. The guy getting drunk the night before and, like, waking up with a hangover. The girl with leaving her handbag to prop the door open and having it smash her glasses. And then just the itty-bitty mistakes, and then they create this super bacteria which digests everything. It was just like, it was simple. It wasn't sort of ham-fisted down. Like, I didn't feel like I was being told, look, this thing's killing the world, this thing's killing the world. I didn't have that sense this time. And I really felt like it flowed supernaturally with the story, like, of the monks invading and sort of being like, da-da-da-da-da. We can save you, but only if you love us. And that scares the shit out of me. Like, the idea that this alien race is so confident in their ability to take control that they set up the contract as not, we get money, we get, you know, service or anything. It's we must be loved. And that scares me more than anything. Because I don't like the idea of someone saying, you know, I'll save you, but you must love me. And then for Bill to do what she did at the end, and I want to talk about that a little bit later, but for Bill to do what she did, and it being recognized as love, gave me chills. And it was just, oh.
That was an amazing ending.
Yeah, the monks this episode were really strong. They weren't sort of background creatures, and nor were they ever present creatures, but they were just there, and they had enough of an impact for me to actually feel like that was scary. Last time, I just kind of was a bit blasé and sort of like, yeah, they're there, but I'm not super interested. And to go on about the girl in the lab, like this, that was probably my favourite parts of the episode, were the lab scenes where it's just slowly unfolding and you're just like, oh no, you know, this is a big fuck up, a dumb fuck up, but a big one. And the doctor comes in and he's still blind and he's creating all these like little objects, and the lab technician gets it. Like, she's just like, you're doing this? Like, and he's just like, seriously, what are you doing after this? And I just, that kind of relationship, whoever's the next companion, I hope we can have something akin to that, because Bill has been so fresh, and yet again, we have another person who's coming up with innovative ideas. Like, it's not just, what's going on there? It's like, I get what you're doing, because, you know, I'm smart, I'm not making dumb decisions, and it's like, ugh, that's so good, I'm so happy to see that. What was the other thing? The president reference was pretty cool. But the music in this episode was what got me. Like, a lot of the time I'll be like, oh, this episode's good because of the music. Like, they'll just have edited it really well. A la Hellbent. Because... Not Hellbent, Heaven Sent, sorry. But Hellbent as well, because they both had really... Like, the episodes were edited together, but they had a heavy emphasis on the music. And I have gone back and re-listened to those tracks so many times online, because there's no official soundtrack yet. Murray Gold, what are you doing? Please get back to me.
I don't think it's Marius Goldfall. I think it's the BBC.
Yeah, it's the company. Like, I think it's Silver something or other, but they had a stake.
Yeah, I still don't understand the dynamic between Silver Screen and BMG.
Yeah.
They're just... We want our audio, goddammit!
Murray Gold is a legend. And I'm so sad that we can't get this.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, and the music at the ending in particular, and I've shown it to Ringo a little bit before, and Nickname, if you want to click that link below, there's this little
click
moment.
Click that link, guys.
it's not available to people, but maybe we can make it available on the YouTube page or something. But the moment where Bill... consents to the monks and says, you know, if you give the doctor back his sight, you can take the world and everything, da 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 da, but I need you to save him. I'm a little bit wishy-washy, but I liked how the music that started playing was a callback through all the episodes, and you hear it, you gotta look out for it, but it's the little theme. And it plays in like Bad Wolf and Doomsday and everything. And I'm pretty sure it's in the 10th Doctor's theme and the 9th Doctor's theme. And there's all these callbacks. And just as he gets his vision back, and it's just one of those moments where I go, that's it. That's made it. That's my favorite episode. And it will take a very strong contender to defeat it. And that's where I'm going to leave it, because otherwise I'll ramble for hours and hours and hours.
Well, do you guys want to specifically talk about that scene? We may as well. It's probably, well, it's my highlight of the episode. I'm not surprised if it's your guys' highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure.
So, oh man, the doctor gets himself in a predicament. Put it that way. tries to blow up a building with him inside, and he can't read the
dial,
the numbers, the dial to get himself out. And I found it quite touching, his confession to Bill about him being blind, and Bill's reaction of deservedly so being angry at the doctor for being an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean Nardole called him out on it too, the last episode, so so it's good to see Bill like, are you serious, you freaking idiot? But I still like the doctor, how he still doesn't want Bill to go to the monks. Like, he wants to own up for responsibility. Something that Tennant should have done before. But, but, yeah, the Doctor realizes he's caused these actions. He should be the one that suffers them. And then Bill goes out of her way to, go to the monks to give him his eyesight back. And I feel like this could set up something quite interesting between those two, because basically she went behind his back, even though he said he didn't want it.
Yeah.
Wow, it sounds like the 10th Doctor and Donna all over again. Yeah, I'm bringing back bad memories for now, aren't I? But, yeah, so Bill chooses to go behind his back and then give him his eyesight. He does escape. But at the cost of the monks now being able to rule the world.
Which we still don't know why they want to, but...
Yeah, and I'm getting into my... that'll be part of my negative.
Yeah, good, okay. I didn't want to segue too early, but... God damn. Can we please know? Yeah.
But just that 5-minute sequence as a whole is an awesome thing to watch. Yeah. Do you guys have anything else to add on to that?
Ringo?
Just real quick, that the thing with the Doctor trying to get not being able to see the numpad, it reminded me of Tennant and the Four Knocks being just Wilfred. It's such a simple way to go, and just I'm like, no, this is bullshit. It can't just be this fucking numpad that he can't see. Obviously, I knew it wasn't going to regenerate, but it still had that. I was still very reminiscent of that episode. But apart from that, goddamn. That was a really great ending. And as kind of said, the music really helped. But, Mr. Fax?
I just want to talk about the glasses, like the sonic sonar sort of thing. In the last episode, I thought it was neat, but it felt a bit gimmicky because it was like the Doctor gets out of it. But like you mentioned, I like that he can't see specifics. It's like he's gotten a general surrounding, but he can't look at... Like, if somebody handed him a piece of paper, he would not be able to read what was on it. And I just like that. That's the catch. You know, he can see, but he can't see well. And for him to be hindered like this and get caught up in that and have to pay for his mistake. Yeah, it was just... Oh, mwah, love it.
Well, you say that, but Extremis did establish that, like, he couldn't tell who the Pope was, for example. He could just see male at a certain age. He didn't know that was the Pope.
Yeah.
So they do kind of... It is a nice recurring thing that he can only see things as a whole and not specifics.
Mm.
But now he won't have to worry about those glasses anymore because he's got his eyesight back.
Yeah.
I'm curious because with the next episode... It was something that Daniel in that time had mentioned, but in an interview he was sort of like, is this, like, have they gotten out of the simulation, or is this a more accurate depiction of Earth still in a simulation?
I don't know.
So if
it's,
he's still...
It's a good question. I don't think they answer that question, to be honest.
But, yeah, because if they do, and, like, they sort of make the whole thing a cheat, I'm going to be mad, like... I'm getting a bit sick of it sort of being like, da-da-da, and he got his eyesight back or something or other, or like, yeah, some way around it. But the way it was done here, if it continues on like that, I'm satisfied enough with it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yep. I can't disagree with that.
Negatives.
Yeah, let's go negatives. Alright, who wants to start? Because I'm going to go last on the negatives.
Ringo, do you want me to go?
Alright, I'll just say a couple that I found. I think... And it's just, I don't know if this is a gripe or just anything, but I feel like the rest of the... apart from, I think, Togo Igoa as Secretary General, I thought was fine, but the rest of those officials, I feel like, were miscast like hell. I felt like their surrender to the monks and all that was just to get the story going, and that they didn't feel like their characters. I don't know, that was just the thing that I found with them. And the ending, this is the teeniest fucking nitpick you could possibly have, but that took a lot longer than a minute 40 seconds. Just saying. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's the movie 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's the 2 minutes where it's actually 5 minutes, but no one cares.
I didn't care, but I noticed it, and I couldn't unnotice it. I'm like, but shit's about to be happening now, but it hasn't happened. It's been a minute. Anyway.
There's no way that she got in there, and there was still a minute 40 left. No. We were getting at least a minute. Yeah, no, I agree about that. That was not one of my negatives, but...
No. Yeah, this is just a nitpick. But... I think it was just some plot conveniences and a bit of flawed writing and that miscast that really took it from amazing to great. But I still love this episode, so I don't have much negative to say. Mr. Fax?
I agree with that statement about the UN officials, I guess, or the country representatives. They're kind of forgettable, mm-hmm. and they don't really contribute to the plot. And it was kind of like, it was a missed opportunity. You could have had some really, like, really great characters come out of that. But I felt like, again, that the fact that they surrendered, it was just sort of like, they're a single purpose cast, and that's it. And that's disappointing. I think, I'm pretty sure it was this episode, but Nardole's dialogue was a little bit on the nose again. And I'm like, it didn't work for me as much this time. But it's not a huge negative for me. And I'm going to end my negatives with a nitpick as well, because it's just such a fucking, like, minuscule one. But the end of the world was caused by a misplaced decimal point. Know your grammar, kids, because otherwise you're going to kill everyone. So,
yeah. Do maths.
Do maths.
Do your maths.
Yeah,
or you may end up destroying the world. So, you know,
it's a good point. But yeah, Nick.
All right, strap yourselves in.
Okay. Do I need a second? Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, you sure do. Okay, so as I mentioned, I enjoyed this episode, but man, the amount of plot conveniences that had to happen for this entire episode to work was ridiculous. Okay, I'm gonna get my list out here because I can't remember these off the top of my head. Alright, so let's start with the beginning of the episode. Why did she wedge her bag containing her glasses in the door when she has the keys in her hand? Can you guys explain that to me? Why did she do that?
For plot conveniences.
also to tie into that, why doesn't she have a second pair of reading glasses? I don't know a single person that does not have at least two pairs of reading glasses available in case one of them gets lost or broken.
I don't have.
And yet she...
I only have one pair.
You don't
glasses.
Have a second pair.
I only have one.
Wow.
It's too expensive, mate.
You're going to destroy the world.
There you go. You'll end up destroying the world now. But, like, any rational person with money would have a second pair. I don't know. It just, that felt way too, this may sound like nitpicking, but this is just, this kickstarts the entire plot. Right? Is the fact that she can't read. We have the guy that's hungover, who shouldn't even be there in the first place, because there is no way they would allow a hungover person to deal with chemicals. But, sorry, this is just me as a scientist, and this really pissed me off.
I can imagine. Like, I was a bit, like, frustrated with that part, with, like, how incompetent and silly that was. But I couldn't imagine how an actual science... scientist... Can I call you a scientist, Nick? Is that...
Yeah.
Yeah?
I might do forensic science.
How a forensics scientist would react to this. Like, he'd probably be off his head. And I remember that, oh, Nick does chemistry. He must be losing his shit right now.
Well, I'm not done.
Oh, no, continue. I can tell.
Oh, my God. Who the hell would take their helmet off around gas? You absolute idiot. I don't care if you're going to throw up. You don't ever, ever take your mask off around gas. Especially biochemical gas. You fucking idiot. No wonder you deserve to die for that stupidity. Yeah. Oh, you're really getting me now. Sorry.
You know,
you really get into the mood.
You know Nick's angry when he's calling someone who's dead an idiot.
Yeah. And they leave the fucking doors open. No way would any reasonable scientist leave the door open, no matter what kind of emergency. That's first year shit that they are failing on right now. Like, I wanted to slap these people. I would have died in the process, but I don't care. I just needed. Also, why does a biochemical company that deals with gases have an air filtration system that could pump toxic materials into the atmosphere? Why? What? Why not burn it? They literally address that. That's the entire resolution, is they burn the gas. Why not have that as your way to remove it? Why put it into the atmosphere? A biochemical company would not do that because it'd be such a liability.
I would just like to point out that burning it would involve blowing it up. So, in some form, so that would probably, like, damage equipment, so they're just like, oh, pump it out.
No, I mean like filter it into like a furnace or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably
where you could have it be like constant, but you know, not blow up your entire place. Mm. Basically, far out. Also, and this is my one gripe with the ending. Why would a biomechanical lab need a spin lock? Well, why would it use it? Like, if you're going to use it for emergencies, you would use either a keypad or a key card for evacuation. The spinning would take too long. I don't understand. That's like, it's so impractical, and yet it's used only as a way for the doctor to have his downfall. Like, oh, far out. That took me out of that moment completely. I think that's all I got. I have no... Also, do we still have any motivation for the monks trying to conquer the Earth yet?
Not yet. Nah.
Not yet.
Please, Lila Land, please give us that.
Because I'm just thinking, like, I kind of gave Extremis a pass because I was just trying to set things up. But this is Ep 2 of 3. We still have no motivation for these villains that want to take over the world. And now they've successfully taken over the world. And we still have no idea why. But, yeah, so, this is just, I just don't get that. My other, and this is a nitpick, this last one.
Okay.
Right? So, why do the monks need consent to rule the world? Like, I don't understand the logic behind that.
I think it's part of their brainwashing technique. If, because... I don't know, but there's not. It doesn't seem like they have like a chamber or anything to set up, you know, like having one person and using that one person to brainwash the entire nation. But sorry, world. but I think it's got to do, I think, with some sort of like you know how the master had the arc net or whatever it was. That word slowly.
Yeah, the Archangel Network.
That's
the
one. Mm-hmm. Arknet is Men in Black. Wrong series.
Completely different series.
But yeah, the Archangel Network, and he was slowly hypnotizing people into a state of fear. I think it's probably going to be something like that. Like, they just use it. Like, maybe it's a contract thing. So it's like, you know how it's like, I fully consent to it. So... maybe they're using that sort of emotion of love and fully consenting to being ruled as, like, the template and broadcasting that over everyone. So, I don't know. That's just a theory. But, yeah.
It's just, yeah, I think it could have been explained a little better.
Mm.
Like, what establishes love as a pure... there's pure consent, but with strategy and fear isn't. I feel like fear is a greater consent than love is.
Well, part of my theory is that if that template is broadcast over everyone, then they'll get that feeling. So if there's a slight amount of fear, there's going to be a slight sort of dislike, I guess. So it's like you fear something, you don't really want to be a part of it. You do it out of strategy, you're not fully going into it, you're compromising. Love is where you surrender everything, so...
But I feel like regardless, you're going to have your rebels anyway, for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they get, like the monks are going to do something that's going to cause an uprising. One way or another.
Well, we wouldn't have an episode 3 if we didn't.
Yeah, so, like, I don't understand why the type of consent would matter. As long as you've got consent and be like, sweet, like, at the comic of the world now, it shouldn't have to matter, like, oh, this was impure, this is pure. It just felt like...
I feel like, I don't know. Given the weirdness of it, we might, like, it might have something to do with, like, I feel like this is, like, a revelation to come about their origins, maybe, or something to do, because I feel like that this is too weird of a whole consent thing to just be passed off as their thing. I feel like they have a reason for it, and hopefully we'll find out that reason soon, or then it's just a really, really weird thing that they have, because,
yes,
I don't know, it's just weird. It's very peculiar.
But yeah, if you couldn't tell from all that, yeah, so, it's, as I said, it's a good episode. As I said, the ending was pretty good, but, yeah, I have to maintain a lot of disbelief at times to get to that. You know, just so much wrong has to happen that yeah. shouldn't normally happen for this entire episode to work.
Well, you know what Matt Smith said? Alien technology plus human stupidity.
He said a lot of things.
I mean, he did, but...
Yeah, human stupidity plus alien technology, trust me, it's unstoppable, something like that, yeah. Unbeatable. There we go.
There you go.
I will say, there's one positive to end this on after that entire rant. It does contain one of the most subtle favourite jokes I've ever seen in an episode. So they're in the TARDIS at the end there, Nala and the Doctor, and the Doctor goes, it's like, are you following me, right? Like Nardole, like he's referring to the fact that he's following around the TARDIS. Nardole's reaction's like, yes, I think I get it. And I'm like, that is such an odd thing. Oh my god. He totally misread the question. I laughed. Oh, my dad. I had to explain it to my dad. He didn't get it either. And I had to explain it to him, but it was just, oh, subtle brilliance by both people to get that joke to work. Day, I was really happy with that one.
Fairly embarrassed because I didn't pick up on that joke until just now. So
yeah.
I sort of stood there for about 5 to 10 seconds just going, what the fuck? How is he? What?
it feels like such an odd reply from Nardole, considering we understood the context, but then you finally follow Nardole and like, you idiot. Absolute idiot. Do you guys have any final thoughts about Lie of the Land?
Nope.
Lie of the Land?
Oh, sorry. We might as well get into the Lie of the Land trailer, but, sorry, Pyramid at the End of the World. Any thoughts about Pyramid at the End of the World before we get too into the Lie of the Land next time trailer?
That was a nice segue from your mistake there.
Yep.
Nothing from me.
Max? I wish there were more buttons. That's about it.
What? I don't understand. What do you mean more buttons?
It's a very unique reference to a very particular segment that Peter Capaldi did for Doctor Who, for the Doctor Who experience. But yeah, I miss proper buttons.
Yep, fair enough. Lie of the Land, next time trailer. Oh,
this looks really good.
Oh,
please be good. Oh, this looks good. I love the parallel so cool. Stuff. I love like the, you know, the way this episode's set up and the Doctor looks like he's involved in some serious shit. And I'm so excited. Okay, that's it for me.
this honestly looks like the first exciting trailer of the series.
I agree.
Like, oh man, like it brings so much intrigue and the gunshot at the end, like, ooh, what's Bill doing? Is she bad? What's going on, you know? Is the Doctor going to die? We don't know. Yeah, so much intrigue. Do you guys have anything to add to that?
Facts?
This trailer makes me mad.
Uh-oh.
So, it's frustrating because it's the exact... It's the same scene from the Coming Soon trailer, like, that went for the whole season, and they showed Peter Capaldi regenerating, or at least his hand or something. He's wearing the same clothes, it's the same background, but we're only just over halfway through the season, and I've seen pictures of Peter Capaldi on set with the next couple of episodes, and I'm just annoyed, because it's like, you could have done something... And you could have made that really interesting, but because I know for a fact that he's not going to be gone. Like, if he regenerates, he's either going to do what Tennant did and regenerate into something else and keep the same face, or he's not even going to regenerate and it's just going to be fake, and I'm annoyed. But on the bright side, I'm interested to see what leads up to that, because... A dystopian world where the Doctor has to get shot, and I'm thinking that actually might be Bill who's shooting.
Yeah, that looks a lot like Bill.
Yeah, this could, like, I'm not sure if Bill's against the Doctor or the Doctor's against Bill or something, but I want that plotline. Please give me. So, yeah.
Well, here's my thought, right? Would they really give away a regeneration scene in the beginning of a series?
And they did it last one.
What do you mean?
Season 9, they sort of said, oh, you know, someone to the extraction chamber, there's a regeneration in
process. Oh, yeah, the Doctor's regenerating, but the regeneration in process or something like that. We're supposed to think it's the Doctor, but it's not.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, but like, let's be honest, like, I saw that trailer from the beginning of the series, I'm like, he's not going to regenerate, that's not his regeneration scene. I'm sorry, but they wouldn't give away something as important as that.
Well,
same thing with John Sim, I reckon John Sim will not be as important in the grand scheme of things as we all think he will be.
Interesting.
So, yeah, because it wouldn't make sense otherwise. Why would you give away such an obvious, I don't know, exciting bit, you know? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, we haven't seen anything of him yet. So.
No, we haven't.
I think you're wrong.
I'm pretty sure that's because...
I think he's actually going to be super integral to the finale. Like, he will be the main plot point.
Oh, no, but I mean, like... That exact shot of John Sim is not going to be important.
Oh.
Like, I reckon he himself will be important, but not... The shot we see of him in the war, like in the war area.
That'll probably just be, like, being like introduced, if anything.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, I don't think that the entire shot, which looked like John Sim on like Gallifrey during the Time War, which, yeah, do you guys still think that's where it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either that or Khan. My sister to Khan.
See, I reckon that'll be like a brief flashback type thing. Like, I don't think it'll be as important. That will be.
They're not going to Sherlock us, are they?
Pardon?
They're not going to Sherlock us, are they? We've all been looking forward to this.
You go through it.
To this
all
old
of a sudden. Time War.
No! We've all been excited for this one villain to come back, and it's all in a flashback. Don't you dare. Doctor Who, don't you fucking dare.
And it was all a dream.
That was awesome.
This whole time, it was a simulation.
that'd really Jimmy GFX.
If the entire series up to this point from the Time War had been a simulation, I wouldn't be mad. If it had been a dream, I wouldn't be mad. If the entire series of season 10 was a simulation, I'd be fucking pissed. Because that's a waste. And,
I've got a question, right? What if the Doctor is still in the confession dial?
Ooh.
I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with that because I would like to see them do another run of that with Gallifrey and get it right this time. You know?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I don't know. That'd just be a nice workaround of the idea of it was all a dream, you know.
Mm.
Just feel like you're still stuck in there. You never really got out.
But yeah, shall we?
Yeah. Do you guys want to get into the best of Series 6?
Oh yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Really excited. This season is very. Oh, okay. Let's go.
Hey, what's the order this week, by the way?
Oh, okay. The order for this week is. That's me doing a drum.
What window are we going to look at?
Alright. Let me actually find it. He's where have you gone?
He's having
little
trouble.
Shit. So we've got Connor, number uno, Nick, number due, and me, number three.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
So you will not even get a vote this time.
I'll either not get a vote or be the deciding vote. So yeah, we shall see what happens.
You're probably going to be the deciding vote, if anything.
Interesting.
Yeah, well...
Did people have trouble choosing a favourite, a best for this season?
No, I was pretty confident in which one I liked the most. Like, I was tossing up between two, but I was like, which one would I have no hesitation watching? And I was like, yeah, it's got to be this one. So, yeah, I know which one my pick will be.
I tossed up between three, and I'm not going to lie, it was really difficult. So this would be interesting. How about you, Fax? Was it an easy choice, or did you have to think about it?
I had a standout one for number one, but after four, it got hard to pick out episodes. Because it was like, oh, season six wasn't as great as I remember.
Yeah, there is a lot of... it's a very hit and miss series, series six.
There were hits that I loved, but then, there were some episodes that I just couldn't even put anywhere near this list. Of best.
Night Terrors.
I will... guess I will start out, as usual, with my favourite of the series in a two-parter, funnily enough. My favourite episode of Season 6 goes to The Almost People. For those who don't know what the episode is, it is the second part of a double episode surrounding these creatures called gangers, which are basically these...
Gangers.
Yeah, they're called gangers, but I think they're doppelgangers, which is the full word, which means someone who looks exactly like you. But these are actually built... I don't know if I should call them robots or androids or something, or if they're just like avatars, basically.
Flesh avatars, I think, is what they're referred to at one point.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're designed to represent... Yeah, there's a picture that's just been posted in the group chat of the avatar doctor. But yeah,
creepy as shit, I tell you. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
I'm getting Lazarus Experiment vibes again, and I don't like that.
But yeah, these creatures are basically used to help in the mining of acid, but a solar storm arrives, and like all solar storms do. They fuck up everything. And these creatures come to life. This episode has got to do with the gangers fighting for the ability to be recognized as people, but also they're taking over their the people who they were built around, I guess, of. Yeah, they're copies, and they're trying to kill the originals, but it's sort of the struggling for independence, and they both have the same, or they all have the same memories of the other person, and they're struggling with that fact of not being comfortable in their quote-unquote skin. The reason I love this episode so fucking much is because of the plot that develops between the fake doctor, well, not the fake doctor, the flesh doctor, and the real doctor, or the unflesh doctor. I really don't like using the names, because in this episode you see Amy struggle with the doctor, and how he just becomes so sort of weird, and then you get John Smith come in, like he calls himself John Smith, as he's the quote flesh doctor, but he's sort of like this hyper evil, or not evil, but malicious kind of version of the doctor. He feels like the repressed stuff, and the way it sort of flows, you have him going, you know, fuck it, you're all like, you're all dicks, you don't care, and he leaves. But the doctor's just like, just let him go. He'll sort of out himself. And he was trying to bond with the flesh. And then, you know, you've got them struggling for this fight, and you got Rory trying to recognize what is real and what is fair. And, you know, he's just like, he's trying to be kind, but he's also ignorant of the evilness of one of the characters, one of the flesh characters. And in the penultimate ending of the doctor saying, I'm not the doctor, he is, pointing to the flesh doctor who's been called John Smith. The rug pull that happened was so out of the blue, but so clever, and I'm mad that I didn't recognize it, but it's like, we switched shoes, because that was the identifying thing. And it was just like, he's been trying to teach Amy to appreciate that even though someone looks the same as another person, they can still be just as kind. You don't have to be cruel. And it was so nice to see that. And the characters were just so real. And, like, I felt for them. I connected with them. And the doctor, like, even John Smith, like, the flesh doctor, when he was pulling off these nasty sort of things and shoving Rory and sort of being maniacal and everything, he was still so good. And it's one of the best moments I think that Matt Smith has. And that's why this is my number one pick for season 6.
I have one question, right, in regards to the Almost People. That's the one thing that's bugged me ever since I watched it. How can they switch shoes?
Because the shoes, you can take them off. It's
No, but I thought that the ganger, like the entire thing, was just flesh.
It is, but it's separate. It's basically separate entities of matter, but they're still wearing it. And then,
do they ever say that? Like, because
I know that I don't know. I know that the Doctor mentions at the end of the episode when he's traveling in the TARDIS with the remainder of the crew, that the TARDIS is stabilizing the matter. So it's still in flux. That's why you get the creepy face going on. But that's because of the solar storm. And once it stabilizes, it becomes its own entity. So if you have, like, a biscuit and then another biscuit, but one of them's, you know, fleshy, then that fleshy biscuit will phase in and out. But you can separate the biscuit from the choc chip or something, as an example. Like, you can take out the choc chip. That's still flesh. But it's separate from the entity because it's programmable matter.
Okay. I don't think that's as satisfying as an answer that I might get, but it does give me some sort of clarity, so I'll allow that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not fully happy with that as an explanation, but that'll do, I guess.
Yeah.
Is my go?
Yes.
Yep, you're up.
Okay. So, I'd be annoyed with myself if I didn't nominate this one. My first pick is the Impossible Astronaut. This is how you start a series, basically. Mm-hmm. You have the Doctor and a bunch of his friends go to watch him die. And then you travel back in time, find the Doctor getting a straw, then go back to 1969 to meet President Nixon. And then you kickstart the entire River Song saga, basically.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think. Just, I love the silence in the Apostle Astronaut. They are just such a unique villain. Like, I know that other villains have since adopted that same voice and creepiness a la monks, but for Series 6, like, this was such a cool design, designed off is it the Scream? Yeah, I think it's the Scream, yeah. Just the visual design is just really appealing, plus the fact that as soon as you turn away from them, you don't see them. And it allows them to be this master manipulator of the entire world. Like, everything that happened is because of actions caused by the silence, but no one remembers it because as soon as they look away, they're gone. That snap really added to that moment there. But, it's just such a unique setup that sets up the entire series. Granted, I don't think the resolution for the Doctor dying is as satisfying as introduction, but man, that introduction is still pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
My first pick goes to the Apostle Astronaut.
Alright, my turn. I'm gonna
try
not tange off and just continue through what Nick was saying. So my first nomination goes to Day of the Moon, which is the second part to the Season 6 double. And can I say, before I get into the actual story, how great is Mark Shepard? I really wish we saw him more. I absolutely loved him in this. He's in everything, but
he's still Crowley to me. Sorry.
Yeah, but I was a huge fan of him in this in Doctor Who for the two episodes he was in it. But this episode continues off on the Apostle Astronaut, except we get 3 months later and a whole lot of shit going on with the silence. And I just, the main reason why I love this episode a lot is because I haven't been scared from a Doctor Who episode in a while, and given the silence, as you said, is such a unique villain, and the way Moffat's evolved and how Rory, Amy, Doctor and River have learnt of the silence, and it seems so real and freaky, and the acting in this episode is absolutely amazing. And given my love for Moffat, I have to mention another speech. Matt Smith, after I rewatched some of this season, because this is my favourite Smith season, despite there being some interesting episodes, Matt Smith, I need to rethink my Doctor, favourite Doctor order, because Smith just can nail down a speech as well as everything else he can nail down. But in this episode, they're always great, but this is one of my favourites from Smith, because I feel like if you can pull off a speech, then you're a good Doctor. And that's just a little thing for me. But I have a thing for cold opens. I think the cold open in Day of the Moon and Astronaut were absolutely freaking awesome. I don't know why I love them so much, but this one, we get like a short film in a sense. We tell a story, we get a mini twist, and then the theme starts, and you're like, oh shit, we haven't even actually gotten into it yet. But yeah, I think the main reason why I love this is because we've got a great villain, we've got a really interesting story, it's very, you know, suave and very stylish episode, and they had a scene in a children's home, an orphanage, that, in my eyes, is one of the scariest locations you could ever have anything happen in, ever. But yeah, I think Season 6 started off goddamn well, and to think after this double, we got Curse of the Black Spot. That is all.
I know, right?
That is all.
Such a jarring.
That is all, though. Yeah.
Jarring comparison.
And then,
Yeah,
that's it for that.
Can I just point out, like, what I really love about those two episodes is that they're very grand in its scope.
Mm-hmm.
And it, the thing is, I got to watch The Apostle Astronaut Day of the Moon 2-parter in cinemas. And that is the best way to watch
goodness.
It. On the big screen.
I couldn't imagine seeing some of those scenes on the big screen would have been freaking amazing.
Yeah, so I was very lucky because that was the first time that Doctor Who was ever tried in cinemas here, was for that two-parter. oh my god, one of the best experiences I've ever had. Like, even though it's episodes that I'd already seen, and I went with my dad, by the way, so he enjoyed it a lot, but yeah, even though it's episodes that I'd already seen, it just looked so amazing. Like, just, if you ever can, please do watch it in a movie theater. It's just, it will change the entire feel of the episode for you. Because, like, you watch it on a TV, and you can only get so much within a screen, but, like, you just appreciate the visual details. Like, that first shot when you see that bus, which River's on, go to not River, Amy and Rory are on the bus, I just realised.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that shot of the bus going to the site, it's just, oh, so good. And the music as well, the music really adds to that moment as well. Just, oh.
And the ending of Day of the Moon, just jaw drops, even though I already know everything about it. It's just like, she fucking regenerated, oh my god! Anyway, that is my pick for Best of Series 6. Back to Connor for round 2.
Round 2.
I feel like this is going to be another Sorry Connor episode. My second pick goes to The Girl Who Waited. This was a Dr. Light episode again, but in the unique way that he was still heavily involved, it was just more about Amy and Rory. And I really liked the depth to which this went about loneliness and sort of the sadness of this institution, in fact the cruelty, where it's set up where it has two different time streams, and you know, one is on an accelerated path, the other one is not, but it was done in this sort of twisted way of letting you sort of live out your life with someone even though you had one day to live. And it really got me a lot of these times. So like, you had Rory going out and looking for Amy, and it's like he had this big magnifying glass, which was comically large, but him going through it, it's like this connects back to the old time stream, so you can see if Amy set anything up. And there's this one section where he's sort of like looking around, and there's this smudge against the wall, and he holds it up, and there's the lipstick that Amy has used and has written like, "In here, Doctor," or "In here, Rory." And you're sort of seeing Rory get slowly and slowly like more affected by this. And there's this one line which I'll never forget, but Rory sort of like tells the Doctor, it's like, "See, this is what you do. You make people a danger to themselves." And it's just so impactful. And you see the Doctor sort of like, he wants to help, but he knows what's right and wrong, and he knows that Amy, like young Amy, has all the time that old Amy has to live in. But he can stop that, but at the same time, he doesn't think, like, he recognizes that it's not fair to sort of leave someone behind just so the other one can get out. And it's, you're dealing with all these huge, complex notions, and it just worked as a tiny little episode. It didn't really add much to the overall arc of the series, but by God, characterization was good. So, that is my second pick.
Good choice. Bingo.
No, pardon? It's Nick's turn.
It's you.
Oh, it's my turn. Sorry, I was just getting caught up in listening to the girl who waited. my next pick goes to the Doctor's wife.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman hit this one out of the park. Like, you're talking about characterization for The Girl Who Waited. The characterization between the Doctor and the TARDIS was really highlighted beautifully in this episode. This love between the Doctor and the TARDIS, probably the two constants of this entire show, and you just see them bicker and act like a married couple, and it's just nice to see this TARDIS, who we know is sentient to some extent, like we know it like reacts with like noises and all that, but now we get to see a physical embodiment of the TARDIS and what it thinks of all the companions and the great line about the doctor never opening the door the right way, despite the door saying pull to open, he just pushes it every time. It's just stuff like that, and it's set in this weird bubble universe where you believe that it could happen. We get to see the 10th Doctor's TARDIS.
Yeah.
Like I give the 10th Doctor shit for for things, but his TARDIS was pretty cool. I got a bit. So it was great seeing that TARDIS again. also, I love a nude. Like, who doesn't love a nude?
Love a nude.
Planet of the Ood was one of my picks from Series 4. The Impossible Planet was one of my picks of Series 2. They're just such a cool creature. So it's nice to see them come back, even for a short stint. Although he did get squashed by a TARDIS.
Yeah, like he was atomized. It's like, what does that mean? He was really
another Ood I failed to save. I love that. Also, Martin Sheen is House.
Yeah,
like, he gave me chills. The idea of like the Doctor being outplayed by an entire planet. Now it feels a bit ripped off because of like ego.
Probably was, planet. But yeah.
But I still think House did it better.
Yeah.
I love the quirky world. The idea of like there being like TARDIS scraps everywhere, and they use that to make a makeshift TARDIS. Like that is how you do Blue Peter. Okay. If you're going to tie in Blue Peter to anything, that's how you do it. Not absorbable off. Not ridiculous gadgets for the Paternoster gang to use in Deep Breath. No, that is how you do. That is how you do Blue Peter. So I got to commend Gaiman for incorporating that practically seamlessly. I liked the mind games that House was playing on Amy and Rory as well. That was a really cool insight. Like, at one point, Amy was blind, even though she's not. She thinks that Rory was dead waiting for her, when in fact it was not. It's just, psychologically, it's great just to witness, like, them just being trapped in this TARDIS that was supposed to be, like, this kind of, like, safe place for Amy and Rory, but now it's kind of like been turned on its head because it's now no longer what it was. It's just stuff like that, just wrapped up in such a great story, great characterization, great visuals, great music. I'm fawning over this episode, which may surprise you later on, but yeah, my next pick goes to The Doctor's Wife.
All right. Great episode.
Did I steal your thunder there a bit?
No. No. All right. My next pick for Best of Series 6 goes to A Good Man... Sorry. A Good Man Goes to War is my next pick for Best of Series 6. This episode is one of my most rewatched episodes of Doctor Who. Just because of the thrill I get from watching this each time. It's this episode has the Doctor's best friend, I could call her, abducted, and has the Doctor stopping at nothing to get her back. And it is such a great episode. After a 3-year-ish wait, we finally discover who River Song is, and that reveal is nothing short of jaw-dropping. Even though 10 minutes in, she tells Rory straight up, "You'll find out who I am." That doesn't matter if she said it or not, because at the end it was still freaking amazing. My one gripe with this episode that you had to bring up is that some of the characters he calls upon, I know there are reasons for this, but there are characters that he could have brought up that we actually knew, but unfortunately, some like Strax and Vastra were just starting to know now, and that's a little nitpick of mine, but I thought I'd bring it up because I hear a lot of people mention it. Strax is amazing. I think Strax sold me in this episode alone, and I'm so happy that they brought him back. Vastra and Jenny are a great duo as well. And one of the main reasons why I think this episode just works, for me at least, is we go about 20 minutes not seeing the Doctor at all. It's a Doctor Light first half. And then when his eventual appearance comes, I smile throughout that entire scene. The Doctor's at his darkest hour, his highest point, and he's just not letting any shit go past. And one thing that's often overlooked that I have to bring up is I need to express my love and for the growth of Rory. Rory Williams, when he first appeared in the show, he was a nerdy, stammering nurse at a hospital. But this episode mainly shows his transformation, and he's just such a great character that, surprisingly, I think for a lot of people that I know, not you guys, but a lot of people that I know who watch Doctor Who, he's very overlooked, and I feel like he's got some great development, and this episode really shows it. Because obviously there's that part where Amy's describing the guy who's going to come save him, and everyone, well, you're meant to assume that she's talking about the Doctor, but obviously it's the Last Centurion Rory. But no,
that man is your father. Like, what, the Doctor saved you? What?
with the whole Time Lord, half Time Lord thing. I'm like, don't you dare tell me that they did things with the TARDIS, because that'd be a really awkward scene to picture. No, but this episode is such a fun one, such a great one, and to think that there was a long break after this episode makes me so mad for people who had to watch this, because I binged it, Doctor Who. So I didn't get to have that long wait. But goddamn, it's a really great episode, and that is why I'm nominating it for my best of Series 6.
Can I just point out that A Good Man Goes to War probably has one of the best Rory moments? Rory's goes to the Cybermen Legion. It's like, I have a message and a question. I was like, the question is, where is my wife? What is the message? The thing shit blows up in the background.
That is amazing. I love that.
It's like, would you like me to repeat the question?
Rory's such a badass. I'm so happy.
That was so badass. It was. I love it.
He didn't. Oh, Rory's great. Anyway, that's my pick. Mr. Fax, I believe it goes back to.
I want to mention what I think is an underappreciated line from Rory, but. And I forget where it's from, but it's him and Amy, and he's trying to get away from the villain of the week. And it's like, the villain of the week says, like, would you need some assistance? And it's like, oh, they say something, I forget it. But it's like, good question, bit sinister. What's the right answer to get us not killed? And just sort of him.
Is that thing with the vampires of
villains? That's the one. Oh, God. Oh, I love that line.
It's so good. You just give me a bit of dialogue and be like, oh yeah, I know that line. Yep, sure do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he thinks smart.
That's what I like about him.
Yeah.
My next pick, and this will be my last pick, if that's any hint for you guys, but is the God Complex. But it's just a weird episode, and the reason I'm putting it up there, I don't really like it, and I'm not like super fangirly or fanboy about it, but the reason I like it is it had this weird theme going on with it. Like, it wasn't trying to be too quirky, it wasn't trying to be funny or serious or sad, it just got weird. The Minotaur and the whole sort of thing of like praise him, but it was contagious, so that thought of praise him, and you were so sort of scared shitless, basically, that you wanted nothing more than to die. And then to have that all be just him being in his ship and just as a feeding ground. But he too, like everyone in there, just wants to die. It was one of the weirdest fucking episodes I had seen in New Who. And I think... Oh, go on, tell what you need to say.
No, I was going to say, I was like, it's definitely surreal. Like, it's probably the most... Like, I feel like this is probably the most Kubrick that Doctor Who's ever attempted to be to date. Mm. Because of the ridiculousness, like the praise him and the constant creepy smiles that happen, like... And I like how the Doctor also gets it wrong in this episode.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
But yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to think about the surrealism part.
Yeah, and that's, you're right, that's probably what's drawn me to it, because this episode was just like, it wasn't good, it wasn't bad, it was just there of its own accord, and it still worked. And I reckon, I mean, you guys probably don't agree 100%, but I reckon it deserves a shot at the title, so my next pick goes to the God Complex.
Well, I agree with you.
Yep.
I, if you didn't bring it up, I would have brought it up, and that is my last pick as well. So, Ringo, if you have any more, then
no,
we'll go to...
I think that's it for me, actually.
Awesome. Well, there you go, see?
Our,
I have no problems with the God Complex.
The God Complex is a good type of weird. So. Oh,
I love it. It's absurd, but it works.
It does work, I think.
I love the different rooms and how they're supposed to relate to a different fear. I can't remember. So Amy and Rory didn't have the Whipping Angels as their...
That was the...
room, did they?
The guy is like... Oh, I forget the name of the race, but he's subservient. So... Mm. It's like David Williams or something is the name of the actor.
David Williams is great. But I like, also like how we don't see what the Doctor's fear is.
Mm.
I feel like, even though it's retconned, I feel like not knowing was the better resolution of the two.
Yeah.
just not knowing, or just have the cloister bell going off, and like, yeah, that would allows imagination to some extent, and I feel like that should just stay that way. But yeah, I love watching the God Complex. I have to be in the mood to watch it, but when I'm in that mood, oh, it's great. Mm. All right, so do you guys want to get into actually going to talk about the best ofs now?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Connor, you're first.
Well,
I know you're in.
Yeah,
but say it again.
I'll say it again. But my favourite episode was the Almost People. I've already said my piece, and I already put it up, but I'm going to take a shot and say that Nick doesn't agree with me. And he can continue on.
No, I don't. Not in the slightest. No, I think it's a terrible two-parter. Sorry, Connor.
Here we go. Start the counter.
Hang on. My favourite episode of Series 6, though, is The Girl Who Waited. Talk about a Rory masterclass. Just, everything, the characterization, you nailed this on the head. The characterization for me is what really sells it. Like, it's a very simplistic story, like, the two streams, and Amy gets put in one, and the Doctor and Rory in another, and 36 years goes past, and... Rory has to choose between the old Amy who's had to live 36 years without him or the Amy that none of this happened to, and the Doctor makes Rory decide. And just that scene, like, with Amy and Rory at the door, and it's like, if you love me, don't open this door, because I'll come in there kicking and screaming. And you could just see the heartbreak on Rory's face, like, He knows he has to leave her behind in order to be with young Amy, because he feels so guilty the fact that he didn't grow up old with Amy.
Oh, that line.
Oh, it's like,
I didn't...
As I said, I'm starting to get emotional again just thinking about that thing, because like that relationship is probably the best relationship I think we've seen on screen.
Mm.
Like, we've gone from this flirty girl from Series 5 to this person that truly, deeply cares. And Rory, the person that waited 2,000 years outside a box for her, that episode breaks my heart. It's just amazing, and I don't think I can fault anything about that episode. So yeah, my pick wholeheartedly goes to The Girl Who Waited.
Alright, what am I going to do?
I don't know.
What am I going to do?
Can you top that?
Am I going...
Can you top that emotion?
Am I going to seal the deal right now, or am I going to...
I don't know.
Well, you only seal the deal if there's three votes, so...
This choice was difficult for me, I think. Because while I had fun with some episodes, like Good Man Goes to War, as an example, I wouldn't pin those as fantastic episodes. And while I thought, you know, the flesh double was, you know, interesting. I'm sorry, it's
interesting.
It's not my favorite. I didn't hate it.
No.
So
I don't hate it either. I just don't think.
Yeah. No. Really, it came down to a couple, and I actually rewatched this morning. But I'm actually going to end the votes right now because my vote goes to The Girl Who Waited as well.
Yes! yes!
This episode is just...
It's a great episode.
Expert in storytelling, acting. It just tugs at all the strings so well. And we saw a whole new side to Amy that I just could not fault at all. So, brilliant episode. Brilliant episode.
Yeah. It's actually really interesting seeing an Amy that despises the Doctor.
Mm. It's so odd, but...
But believable at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know how to talk. Like, we should just end it right here, you know? Just end it right now.
Yeah.
You guys happy with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, all right. Where can people find you guys?
GCAP42 on Twitter, and our newly established BOTIAU on Twitter as well. And then we have our Facebook page, and that's me and the podcast I just listed. Where can they find you, Vax?
Eating some jammy dodgers, drinking a cup of tea,
and generally enjoying the first Monday morning I've had off for a few months, which is nice. Although now it's afternoon at this point, so but yeah, I am also found on Instagram at co_sd_ma, and if you have the Twitterables, I am c_sd_m, otherwise known as Lord Geofax. You're welcome. Nick! Where can they find you?
You can find me at the UK election as Lord Buckethead.
Yeah! Hey. The Elmo Party got 3 votes, I'm so happy.
Oh, yeah. Praise Lord Buckethead, man. Can we just point out before I continue? That UK election was fucking hilarious. You had Lord Buckethead, you had Elmo, and then you had a fish finger. It was like three of the nominations. Bloody UK. What would we ever do without you guys? Getting off topic there. You can find me on Twitter at NQuest63. You can find me on Facebook at Bigger on the Inside AU. So I'm responsible for the Facebook. Ringo's in charge of Twitter and YouTube. And you can find me on YouTube nickname.
Good luck finding me there.
Yeah. Still, how dare you steal my life? I'm still uploading Uncharted videos. I'm getting into LEGO Marvel Superheroes. I'm just so excited for that. I can't wait to play that game. But, until the next episode, Nickname out.
Ringo out.
Geofax out.
Ba ba ba, ba da ba ba, ba da ba ba. There, the outro music has to tie in with that, or be that. Up to you. You can't cut me out. Bum ba dum bum bum bum.